tuned to yesterday with an hour of collection curios. I'm Mark Levonier. The old-time radio collection at WRVO Public Media, known as the Ellen Robinson Memorial Library, contains tens of thousands of broadcasts on reel-to-reel tape. There's a vast archive of the big-name shows from radio's golden age, but among the shelves are series with very few surviving episodes, one-off programs, underheard tapes, and long considered to be rare broadcasts. In this hour, we get the reel spinning with programs not yet heard on our show, or at the very least, on the air in a very long time. Later in this hour, an episode of The Comedy Stars of Hollywood from 1932, but first, an audition recording that most likely never made it to the national stage. Development of radio shows hasn't changed too much over the years, and it's not just a printed proposition. Producers and writers would pitch ideas to management, then get the green light to make a sample episode for consideration, what we would call today a pilot. The recording would then be played for the higher-ups at any given station or network, and if thought good enough, also pitched to potential advertisers so a deal could be locked in before more episodes were produced. And that was essential at the time of this next broadcast in 1939, as radio actors, musicians, and in particular sound effects men or Foley artists did not perform for free. Producers working on auditions did often employ a catalog of pre-recorded music instead of tying up a small studio orchestra, but in the 1930s it was contracted that performers would play the theme and interstitial music live on the air. In a way, a radio audition from this period is its own spectacle, especially with the ones that did not get picked up for a regular series. It's a wonder they even survived. This next episode stars Albert Hecht, whom not much is known about other than the fact he performed on Broadway in productions of The Merchant of Venice and The Good Earth in the early 1930s, and also occasionally went under the stage name of Albert Hayes. He's the lead in Dyke Easter Detective, and the story this time for Creeps, from March 19, 1939.
The National Broadcasting Company invites you to meet Dyke Easter, Detective.
Dyke Easter.
Mr. Easter, what's your price to help a man beat a murder charge?
That depends on whether or not he is guilty. Murder is my business.
National Broadcasting Company presents Dyke Easter, Detective, with Albert Hecht as Dyke Easter and the case he calls This Time for Creeps.
Dyke Easter, Detective, a solid phrase. Looks good in my Red Book ad. I earned the price of that ad by letting a paranoid bookbinder empty a gun at me. That proved he needed mental treatment. I don't know what it proved about me, except that murder is my business. You can cry on my shoulder or ask me to stop bullets with my teeth for $25 a day. And what have I got to show for it? A few assorted scars, a broken knuckle, a 2x4 office, one desk, two chairs, one filing cabinet, a private detective's license, and a telephone. I sit by that phone all day, and it's silent as a shelf in the morgue. You tell me why everybody gets pains at night, pains that need a doctor or a detective. Like that night.
Easter, you didn't understand me. I said I killed a man.
What'd you expect? Congratulations?
I've got to see you right away.
Have you got any money? Answer me or hang up.
I've got some money.
Okay. Come up to the office, and remember, I don't take checks. Creepy characters. I could write a book about them, but James Tabor would need a chapter. Mouse size with mouse face, gray skin, darting eyes, mouse voice. He even smelled like a mouse, and he was as terrified as a mouse.
He dared me to kill him. He wanted to die. He kept laughing at me, urging me to pull the trigger. It was practically suicide. Suicide. He can't convict me for that.
Relax, Tabor. Are you sure this what's-his-name is dead?
Max Arlack? He wasn't 6 feet from me when I shot him.
He's dead. Gun?
What?
The gun you used. Let's have it.
I threw it away. Down a sewer.
Good night, Tabor. I don't want the case.
Good night. No. I've got to have help. I'll pay you. Look. I brought money.
Give me the gun.
Here. How did you know?
It was bulging in your pocket. Smith & Wesson, 45. A small cannon.
I bought it at a pawn shop this morning.
Yeah, that was brainy. Recently fired, one shot gone. Tabor, what you need is a lawyer. A good lawyer.
Well, that's the way I feel about it. Put your hands up.
Don't point a gun at me, Tabor. I don't like it.
Easter, you'll help me or I'll kill you, too. I'd just as soon die for two as for one. If you don't swear, you'll... kill me! I'm dying! I got a bad heart. I died.
Shut up. Shut up. And sit down.
You shouldn't have hit me.
I told you I didn't like guns pointed at me.
I'm crazy with fear. You're my only chance.
All right, I'll do what I can. But first, this gun gets locked up. Why did you kill Arlac?
I hated him. He ruined my life.
You're a big help. Where does he live?
1517 Cornelia Drive. Are you going there?
I don't promise a thing. How much money have you got?
$300?
It isn't much, but it'll do for a start. So there I was with $300 in my pocket, driving out into the suburbs, 11 at night, to take a look at the late Max Arlac. I've looked at stranger things for less money. A prowl car passed as I stopped before 1517 Cornelia Drive. It was too bad. Even though they kept going, I got out, looked around. The house was a 50 grand suburban mansion as prosperous looking as U.S. Steel. I walked up the driveway like any honest citizen. The lights were on in a downstairs window. I knocked at the door. Why not? Do you know any easier way of getting into a house?
Yes.
Is this where Titus Pfeiffer lives?
You've got the wrong house.
I made a mistake. I am not looking for Titus Pfeiffer. I'm looking for Max Arlac.
I'm Max Arlac. What do you want? What are you laughing at?
A $300 joke on Tabor. He thinks he killed you if you're Arlac.
Who are you?
Private detective. I'm supposed to look at your remains.
Come in.
There are framed pictures all over the place, all of the same man, a big, square-faced, jowly man who looked like he ate a six-course dinner every evening of his life. Portraits and pictures on horseback, poses at the beach, others shaking hands with people, dozens of pictures.
Are you convinced that I'm Max Arlac?
You're the man in these pictures. You like to look at yourself, don't you?
Photography is my hobby.
What do you do for a living?
Now, see here, whatever your
Easter.
Name is. As you can see, I am in no way injured. This is somebody's idea of a joke.
Well, expensive, too.
It's almost midnight. What else do you want to know before you go?
What does Tabor have against you?
Tabor is an evil little animal. Good night, Easter.
Don't get sore, Mr. Arlac. I'm just making a living. Will you prefer any charges against Tabor?
No, since nothing happened. Does that satisfy you?
Yeah, thanks. By the way, Mr. Arlac, it's none of my business, but if nothing happened, why is this rug bloodstained? You make money hard, and you make money easy. This was one of the easy times. Tabor missed Arlac, or he winged him. Who cares, as long as there was no squawk? $300 for a night's work, a pleasure. I didn't bother going into the office the next morning until after 10 o'clock.
When he makes a buck, he's late to work.
Oh, this is a smart eye, Schiller. Look how relaxed he is.
You two got the makings of an act. What are you, city or county police?
And he's careful. You tell us which, Easter.
Every county. City cops do a cleaner search job. These two had the place torn up, files all over the floor, and the fat one was holding the gun I'd taken from Tabor the night before. There's no use getting sore.
The sanitation commissioner can't revoke a private detective's license. Practically anybody else can.
Look, Schiller, he doesn't know.
Prowl car took your number last night, Easter. Where's Tabor?
I don't know. Why?
Max Arlack was murdered. The sheriff wants Tabor. But he might settle for you. In there.
Sure.
Come in, Easter. Have a chair.
Thanks, Sheriff.
Did Schiller take you down to look at Arlack's body?
Yes, sir.
Is it the same body you saw last night?
Sheriff, Arlack was alive when I saw him last night.
Now, I want to like you, Easter. You listen to me. Tabor came to you last night, admitted killing Arlack around 10 o'clock. He needed an alibi. You agreed to say that Arlack was alive at midnight and was killed thereafter by person or persons unknown. Right or wrong?
I don't sell alibis, Sheriff. Arlack was alive.
You ought to have more sense than to protect a client in a murder charge. Where's Tabor?
I don't know.
Bring in the ballistics report on Easter, Smith, and Wesson.
Sheriff, I took that gun from Tabor last night. It was locked up in my desk.
Don't make me lose my faith in you, Easter.
Here's the report you wanted, Sheriff.
Oh, thanks, Schiller. That's all. Wait outside.
Sure thing.
I got two pictures here. One, the bullet from Arlack's body. The other, a test shot fired from the gun in your desk. They match. You want to see them?
I believe you, Sheriff.
Okay. Now, either Tabor used this gun on Arlack at 10 o'clock, then gave it to you, or you used it on Arlack yourself at midnight. Take your choice.
I'm ready to make a statement, Sheriff.
Sing loud and sweet.
Tabor killed Arlack. Not at 10, but after midnight. He jimmied the desk after I left. He took the gun, killed Arlack, brought the gun back.
Where's Tabor?
Sheriff, if you'll check the autopsy report, you'll find Arlack was alive at midnight.
The house was warm. We can't check that close. I feel sorry for guys like you, Easter. Once more, where's Tabor?
I don't know.
I hate to do this.
Oh. Yeah.
Where's Tabor?
I don't know.
Schiller, come in here.
After 10 years, you learn to rock with a punch. Take a few on your elbows and shoulders. That's easier than losing your license. They needed Tabor. I needed him, too. But I couldn't expect them to believe that.
Where's Tabor?
That's enough. He doesn't know.
Maybe not. But now he earned his money.
It was 2 o'clock when I got back to the office. I called the message taking service. Is Dyke Easter anything from me?
No messages, Mr. Easter.
Thanks. That second click was the wire being tapped and in care. Across the street from my office, two men sat in a car and permitted to study the racing form. I didn't care about them either. The only thing in the whole wide world I cared about was having that telephone ring, hearing Tabor's mouse voice, and getting to him just 1 minute ahead of anybody else. I waited all day, all evening. I was willing to wait a month. At 1:30 in the morning... Hello, Dyke Easter speaking.
Easter, this is Tabor. I've got to see you.
Sure. Any place you say.
Your office isn't safe. There's a house at the foot of Harbor Street. I'll be on the third floor. Hurry.
Don't worry. I'll hurry. In the rear view mirror, I could see the car trailing me. About half a block behind. I was careful not to lose them. They were careful about not getting any closer. I drove through empty streets to the river. Down Harbor Street to a dead end. Long flights of dark stairs lost themselves upward. It could be a trap. I hoped it was. Tabor, it's me, Easter. I'm coming in. The room was unlit, but a thin shaft of moonlight seeped through a dirty window. There was a figure, a man standing on the outer window ledge, framed against the glass.
Easter, I didn't know. It was all a mistake. I can explain.
I wanted him to shoot. I made myself a big, juicy target for his shot. It caught me in the shoulder, but it didn't stop me.
Keep away from me. I'll jump out the window.
I didn't shoot him. I didn't have to. Schiller took care of that for me. Tabor jumped out of the window with the bullets ripping into his body, flung him out. What's the difference? He was dead before he hit the water. Autopsy proved that when they fished him out 4 days later. He had 7 slugs in him. I read all about it in the papers. I knew as much about the case as anybody else. With 5 cents.
You led us to him, Easter. I appreciate that.
Don't mention it.
The body was identified by his wife, his ex-wife. Tabor was a former partner in Arlac's investment banking company. Got squeezed out. He killed Arlac for revenge. As simple as that.
Why, tell me.
Tabor shooting you proved you weren't working together. The case is closed.
The case was closed. Everybody happy except Easter, the chump. I could spend 2 months getting a bullet hole in the shoulder healing and figure out how a man who gets hit by 6 police bullets comes out of a river with 7 slugs in his body.
Well, I shouldn't be doing this, Dyke. There's rules against it.
Will $10 help you forget the rules?
Well, 20 might.
Okay.
Here's a file. Let's see. Harriet Tabor, maiden name, Harriet Crowder, age 28, 5'2", brunette, married, Joseph Tabor, August 18, 1941, no divorce. Separated, 1947, identified body as that of her husband, corroborative identification by Dennis.
Yeah, skip that part. Where does she live now?
208 Oakley Terrace. Ah, thanks a lot, Dyke.
Oglesby Terrace was a rooming house, the kind that makes up in desperate respectability for its lack of private baths.
Mrs. Tabor ain't home.
I could wait for her upstairs.
No.
Well, then, if you could tell me where she works, I'm an old friend.
If you're an old friend, you know where she works.
Some evening, you wait outside a rooming house. Pick a rainy night, 2 days after a bullet was taken out of your shoulder. Watch the tenants coming home, some at 6, some at 8. 10, 12, or any other sweet time they feel like. Then tell me which one of them is the 28-year-old 5'2 brunette who answers to the name of Harriet Tabor.
No, I'm Lola Duncan.
I'm sorry, excuse it.
Oh, that's all right. I'm willing to get acquainted.
Be a detective. Shadow people. Make big money. I'll bet I've spent 2 years of my life waiting on street corners for people who never showed up. Do you like rain? Tell me about it at 2 o'clock in the morning. Excuse me, miss. I want to ask you. I'm awful wet. Sorry. I mean...
Gee. You're sick. You shouldn't be out here in the rain.
I'm waiting. I have to wait.
You come inside with me this second. You can wait in the parlor. Don't make any noise. Mrs. Martinez is a terror. When you feel better or when the rain stops, you can leave. Just close the front door. It's a spring lock.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
That's all right. Good night.
Good night. What's your name, miss?
Harriet Tabor. Good night.
A thin-faced, half-starved girl in a sleazy fur coat yanked you out of the rain so you won't get pneumonia. Now you can show your gratitude. Figure out an angle to connect her with a murder.
Ham and egg, sunny side up, toast and coffee. Hurry it up, will you, sister?
Yes, sir.
What's yours?
Afternoon, Miss Tabor.
Hello. Oh. Hello there. What are you doing here?
Well, I saw you through the window. Thought I'd come in and say thanks properly.
Look, sister, I only got a half an hour to eat. Give us a break, will you?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. I'm very sorry. Here, ma'am, Sunnyside and order up in Java.
What time do you get off, Miss Tabor?
This is my early evening. I'm through at 6.
I'll meet you outside.
If you're sure you want to.
My name is Dyke Easter. I'll be waiting at 6.
Dyke Easter, that's easy to remember.
At 6.
If you like.
Now, that's settled. Maybe I can get my ham and eggs, huh?
Tea and toast is all I want, thank you.
Now, wait, what kind of dinner is that?
Too tired to eat. When you handle food all day long, you can't. Tell me something about yourself, Mr. Easter.
Been at it very long, waiting on table?
Ever since about 2 years ago. Who were you waiting for last night?
Guy owes me money. Been working since you left your husband?
You know about that?
When I'm interested in a girl, I like to know all about her.
Oh. I'm a widow now, completely free. You'll think I'm bold, but I'm only lonely. Are you lonely, Mr. Easter?
Not now. Call me Dyke.
Dyke. Dyke.
You need somebody to look after you, Harriet. Somebody like me. Waiter.
Yes, sir.
2 steaks, French fried potatoes, chef's salad. We'll order dessert later.
Dyke. Oh, Dyke.
Okay, so I'm a monster. I play on the emotions of heartbroken widows. You name it, I'm it. But that doesn't say it all. My business is murder. I'm like a hunting dog. You can't shoot over my head and tell me to forget the quarry. A cop put 6 bullets into a man. He comes out of the river with 7 plugs in him. Where did the 7th bullet come from? I have to know. I have to know.
Wouldn't you like to put your arm around your girl? Dyke, something the matter?
No. Yes. Harriet, there's something I've got to find out.
Anything, Dyke, anything. Just ask me.
What really happened to your husband?
Let's sit down here, Dyke. Breeze off the water is so cool.
Harriet, I have to know.
Of course, Dyke. I'll tell you whatever you want to know. I could tell you so much.
Your husband?
He was killed by the police. He murdered a man, the police trapped him and shot him.
I know that part, but why?
I left him 2 years before it happened, Dyke. Is there nothing else you want to know?
Yes, there is. You knew Arlack. You must have known him. He and your husband were partners.
Max Arlack was a strange man. He lived alone. Nobody knew him.
He was in love with
Dyke,
you.
Look at me. Do you believe that?
I don't know what to believe.
I'm not a pretty woman, Dyke. No. Don't protest. You made me feel pretty and desirable, but I'm not. Not really. I was the kind Jim wanted. Somebody he could rule, not the kind who'd appeal to Max Arlack. Dyke.
I'm sorry, Harriet. Forget I mentioned
it. No, I've been waiting for you to mention it. In the beginning, Jim and Max and Vern were partners.
Vern?
Vern Pollard. He put up the money to get Jim and Max started. Jim couldn't stand money. There never was enough for him. Max only wanted power. They told me Max found Jim stealing. Oh, maybe he did. Jim was forced out of the company, so he killed Max. Does that tell you anything?
Maybe it does.
Is that all you have to say?
It could be a lead.
Could it? I'm glad. Good night, Dyke.
Night? Where are you going?
Home. Dyke, you forgot about the papers. They had your name in it. I knew it all the time, and I wouldn't think about it. Dyke, you're not lonely. Your anger keeps you warm.
Have you ever felt like something that crawled out from under a rock? No? You're lucky. I let her go. I watched the thin, proud back move swiftly along the boardwalk, turn a corner without hesitation. She was gone. She'd never forgive me. Never.
Gave you the brush off, eh?
No. Hello, Schiller. Been following us?
Yeah. You never learn, do you?
I'm stubborn. Schiller, suppose you led the cops to a client's hideout, not accidentally, but deliberately. When is the next time anybody would ever trust you unless you cleaned up the whole mess?
There's that. But you heard the sheriff. The case is closed.
Sure it is. That's why you've been shadowing me.
Easter, you're not the only one with free time, and I can count up to seven. Seven slugs in a man's body when there should be six.
Vern Pollard, the silent partner, he's a natural.
You don't give us much credit, do you? We turned him inside out, no use. The thing is airtight.
But it doesn't make sense. And that seventh slug...
Look, Easter, I owe you something for the shellacking you took. Here it is. Get your license transferred to another city. You might live longer.
I don't know why I kept hanging around Harriet's rooming house. I knew she wouldn't talk to me. I didn't even try to bother her. You go along for days, weeks, nothing happens. And then the sky falls on you. It was one of her early evenings. From the doorway across the street, I watched her walking toward the house.
Harriet, come over here. Hurry!
It was like a magician's illusion. You see it happening, but you know it can't be true. It has to be a trick. The voice was Jim Tabor's. The mouse face above the wheel was Jim Tabor's. But Tabor had been buried a month ago with seven slugs in his body. Harriet identified the body, so did the dentist. Yet now, here before my eyes, Harriet had stepped into a car with him, and they were getting away. I don't know how I got to my car or started it. It was like a wild dream. One moment you're standing alone on the street, the next you're behind the wheel of a car, and the only thing in the world that's important is to catch up, to stop them even if you have to crash into them. They knew I was following them. He tried every trick in the book to shake me. Harriet, I thought she was a starveling. I was sorry for her. That's a laugh, isn't it? The tougher they are, the harder they fall. Dyke Easter, whip him, shoot him, tear his heart out. He got paid for it, didn't he? A police car that came up from behind with a rush, drew abreast, passed me. Tabor must have heard it. He tried a sharp turn into a side road. I'm coming for you. Shoot! Shoot!
Keep back, Easter. He's mine. I want him alive. Come out, Pollard, with your hands up.
The figure that crawled out of the wreck was Jim Tabor, the gray mouse face, the darting eyes. Beyond him, I could see Harriet slumped down in the seat.
Keep coming, Pollard.
Pollard, you're crazy. He's Jim Tabor.
That's what you think. Bert Pollard, I arrest you for the murder of Jim Tabor and Max.
You thought I was playing a game with you, Dyke, that I plotted with Vern to kill my husband.
I thought all kinds of things.
Dyke. Oh, how many times I spoke your name. Dyke. I'm so sorry for you, Dyke. I was wrong. You are lonely, unapproachably lonely and sad.
Harriet, when you spend a lifetime watching evil and greed and violence, it drains you. Ah, forget it. The legal business is all untangled. You'll inherit your husband's full share in the investment corporation. A lot of money.
Vern confessed?
Yeah. Schiller is very persuasive. First Vern and Arlac killed your husband at Arlac's house. Then Vern came to me and pretended to be Jim Tabor, confessed Arlac's murder. The police discount the time discrepancy. A greedy detective is lying for reasons of his own. Then Vern props up Jim Tabor's body in a window, hides himself on an outer ledge, goads the police into shooting an already dead man.
Then why did Vern try to kill me?
You were his last danger. Schiller told him I was seeing you. Vern knew that sooner or later you'd describe Jim to me. So what's another murder? Easy.
Easy. Yeah, I suppose it was. You worked on the case a month. I should be grateful. Pay you.
Schiller cracked it. Take it up with him.
You got Schiller started on it again. He told me that. Let me pay you, Dyke. I never paid you for anything.
No. No, you didn't. You got money now. You think you can pay me for anything? For beatings and bullets in the shoulder and a few assorted scars. No. You can't pay me. Not with money.
Dyke.
Now I'm paid off. Mark the account square. Shut the book. Why not? I'm Dyke Easter. I work for pay. Murder is my business.
Dyke Easter, detective, from the 19th of March, 1939. That NBC audition recording was produced in Chicago by radio writer and director Alan Fishburne. A couple of years after that episode, Fishburne would marry actor Geraldine Kay, known for her stage work and later her advocacy role as counselor for the Chicago Office of Actors Equity. And although the Dyke Easter series didn't come to pass, Fishburne did have his hand in one of the most famous juvenile shows to come out of that city as an occasional writer for Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy, which had wild success across three networks for almost 20 years. You're listening to an hour of Collection Curios on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Levonier. Next off the shelf is a syndicated episode of a format and show from the very distant past, 1932 to be exact, called Comedy Stars of Hollywood. A mix of music and comedy from the team of Brown and Lavelle and one of the earliest radio gigs for announcer Don Wilson, who would join the team of Jack Benny and Mary Livingston a year after this episode and become one of the most well-known announcers in radio for decades. 1932 brought many changes in radio broadcasting, from network transmission lines being constructed for broadcast to some of the first big on-air advertising deals. One of them happened to be with this program, the sponsor being Miles Laboratories, the makers of Alka-Seltzer, who saw so much success from backing the show that they would invest a great amount of money in the following year to radio's popular National Barn Dance. Comedy Stars of Hollywood was based out of Los Angeles and would air at various times and stations in the California market, usually at 7:45 at night, and at times the same pre-recorded syndicated program would air on two different stations in the same evening. Not too many of these shows have made it to this day. This one is the second episode of the show, released on June 1st, 1932.
Alka-Seltzer presents Comedy Stars of Hollywood, featuring outstanding players of radio, stage, and screen, with the great comedy team of Brown and Lavelle, supported by the Biltmore Concert Orchestra under the direction of Yasha Barofsky. Don Wilson is master of ceremonies. Our guest star is Louise Fazenda, one of Hollywood's best-loved comedians. You have loved her ready wit and droll characterizations in many pictures. Now listen for Louise and her infectious giggle later in the program. Alka-Seltzer provides a pleasant, effective way to avoid the discomforts caused by over-acidity. So many of our habits of living in this hurried age tend to bring about an excess of acids. The hustle of business activities, off-schedule and unbalanced meals, late hours, worry, all create an acid condition which in turn is responsible for many common ailments. Indigestion, headache, lack of vitality, and an inclination to colds. That's the time to alkalize with Alka-Seltzer. It is called Alka-Seltzer because it makes a sparkling, alkaline drink. And as it contains an analgesic, acetyl salicylate, it first relieves the pain of everyday ailments, and then by restoring the alkaline balance, corrects the cause when due to excess acid. The next time you feel particularly blue and run down, stop at your drugstore soda fountain and enjoy a bubbling drink of Alka-Seltzer. Then take home a 60 or 30 cent package and use it regularly.
Now big jovial Don Wilson steps up to the microphone wearing his broadest smile, all ready to cover himself with glory as your old maestro of ceremonies. Don Wilson.
Thank you, Fred. Greetings and salutations, ladies and gentlemen. Well, we'll get right along with the program as Brown and Lavelle, that loving, playful, altogether carefree comedy team, steps up to the microphone. Brown and Lavelle, here they are.
Oh, honey, I'm so happy. I just come from the most gorgeous wedding.
Is that so? Was it a big affair?
One of the biggest weddings I ever saw. 3 bridesmaids and 6 shotguns.
tell me. How did the groom look?
What?
How did the groom look?
Oh, furtively.
No, I mean, how was his appearance?
Oh, he went blindly into marriage.
Is that so? Mm-hmm. How come?
Well, the bride's father shut one eye, and her brother shut the other.
did you get a piece of the wedding cake?
Sure I did.
And did you put it under your pillow?
No, darling, I ate it. And put the pillow over my stomach.
No after effects in the morning, I hope.
Oh, certainly not. I use good old Alka-Seltzer.
You've said that so much the folks will think the name of the product is good old Alka-Seltzer.
Well, to get back to the wedding, it was a beautiful affair.
Mm-hmm, sort of a military wedding, huh?
Yeah. Everybody left the church under an arch of raised eyebrows.
Yeah. I suppose the bride wrenched her lip sneering at the people. Well, are they happily married?
Certainly. She has a husband now that's scared to death of her.
Tell me, where did they go on their honeymoon?
Oh, they went to Catalina Island. You know, the place where they have all those glass-bottom boats.
I've never seen any reason for those boats. What's the idea? Do you know?
Yeah. That's so the fish can see how big the fellow is he got away from.
Well, I saw a fellow on one of those boats once, and he was all bent over.
Yes, I saw him. He was all bent over like this, almost in a half.
What was that from? Fishing?
No. Keyhole.
Frank Brown, ladies and gentlemen, as he turns loose on the old xylophone. Privilege to present Miss Louise Fazenda, that star of this performance, who brings you the first broadcast probably ever held in the telephone booth. Miss Louise Fazenda. The first insult you will hear will come from Central.
Drop 5 cents, please.
What do you mean, drop 5 cents?
Aren't you using a nickel phone?
No, it's a black one. Look, Central, how long does it take me to get to my home?
Will you please hang up and dial information?
I've got a wife and kids waiting for me.
Number, please.
7, including the baby.
I'm sorry, that's the wrong number.
Gosh, I can hardly believe my own senses. Central, will you please give me 7777?
Are you calling?
With 4 sevens, of course I'm calling. Look, Central, look here. I think that you're the sweetest girl that I've ever talked to. I wonder what she thinks of that line.
Your line is out of order.
Central, my arm is getting tired. If you don't hurry, I'll have to have it cut off.
I'll connect you with the chief operator.
Look, Central, listen. I've been standing here for an hour.
Your 3 minutes are up.
I thought you telephone girls were nice, but now I know you're just a bunch of wet blankets.
I'm bringing them.
If I had the time, do you know what I'd tell you?
When you hear the sound of the gong, the time will be 6 33 1/2.
One more remark and you know what I'll call you?
There's been a mistake in your call. Will you please hang up and try again?
Oh, never mind, Central. I'll walk home. I'll save time.
Oh, mister. Would you tell me roughly how to get to the river?
Now, why and what do you want to get to the river for?
Oh, I want to commit suicide. I'm out of a job, and I haven't any money. It's awful.
Oh, there, there, there. Now, don't cry, lady. Look, look, here's $50. Now we'll see about getting you a job. What sort of work do you do?
I'm a telephone operator.
A telephone operator? Never mind the river. This is quicker. Our good friends Brown and Lavelle. They're discussing money matters and relatives. That's quite a usual combination. Let's see what Brown and Lavelle have on their minds.
I love to rumba. I love to rumba with a Don Wilson. Oh, did you know Don Wilson's brother just got out here?
Yeah, I was afraid of that. How'd he borrow the money to get here?
He didn't have to borrow any. He hitchhiked. Some fun.
You know, I never liked that brother.
No?
No, he wasn't exactly honest.
Honest? Honey, that guy is so crooked that nails have turned to screws in his pocket.
I remember him very well. I used to go with his sister. And if I remember rightly, she was terribly bashful.
Yes. You know something? We went out to the racetrack one day, and she didn't have time to get completely dressed.
No? What happened?
Well, the starter said, "They're off." And she fainted.
Well, I think you're off, especially in the mornings when you have such a temper.
Sure, darling. Those are the mornings when you forget to bring home the Alka-Seltzer.
Nowadays, it isn't enough for the husband to bring home the bacon. He has to bring home the Alka-Seltzer, too.
Well, honey, when you don't bring home the bacon, there's always plenty of bulbs in the house. We just have a light lunch.
Yeah. Well, we always have plenty to eat. Didn't I bring home some cheese last night? And that cheese was imported.
Yeah. Well, after one look at it, honey, I think it should have been deported. You know something?
Well,
go on and ask me a question, darling.
Well, have we ever been without food in the house?
Have we? I remember the time when we just walked into the dining room, inhaled deeply, wiped our mouths, and walked out.
Nothing like Alka-Seltzer to relieve headache. New, different, better. This refreshing alkaline drink relieves pain promptly, pleasantly, and effectively. And at the same time, Alka-Seltzer neutralizes excess acids in the body. which are the usual cause of most headaches and other common ills, such as neuralgia, rheumatic and muscular pains, stomach troubles. Alka-Seltzer is effective for such a wide variety of ailments that you'll be glad to have it on hand for emergencies. Your druggist guarantees Alka-Seltzer. Purchase a package now. Take it according to directions. Use the whole package if you like, and then if you're not thoroughly satisfied with results, take the empty carton back to your druggist, and he will cheerfully refund your money. You'll find it's wise to alkalize with Alka-Seltzer. And now here is Alka-Seltzer's own way of wishing you health, long life, and happiness. Listen to it fizz.
Comedy Stars of Hollywood, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 1st of June, 1932, a syndicated episode. Before host Don Wilson joined Jack Benny for his decades-long run on the air in 1933, following the close of the Comedy Stars of Hollywood, he was host on another comedy music show called The Mirth Parade in 1933. During its 8th episode, the comedy team of Brown and Lavelle, who we just heard, came back and were invited again for their 12th broadcast, and their appearance actually brought forth one of Don Wilson's most famous radio bloopers. Listen right to the end.
Well, here come a couple of scorchers burning up the highway. As the dust clears, we see that it's none other than Brown Lavelle just pedaling away on their bicycle that has an oversized tire on the rear wheel. You know, these folks just pedal and pedal. They pedal past one house and then another. In fact, they're just house-to-house peddlers. Brown and Lavelle.
Is it true, dear, that you're learning to ride a bicycle?
Yeah, and did I fall off?
You fell off?
Uh-huh. And right on my first attempt, too.
Well, I hope you didn't dress in those new shorts that all the girls are wearing.
Yes, I did. And that was the first mistake I made. I had on some yellow ones.
Yellow ones? Well, yellow's a very attractive color.
Are you telling me? I attracted everybody's attention.
Is that so? How come?
Everybody I passed thought I was a yellow cab.
Well, tell me, how long did it take you to learn to ride a bicycle?
Oh, about a dozen sittings.
Is that so? You know, I've ridden a bicycle for hours on end.
Hours on end? Why don't you get somebody to teach you?
Now, look here. Bicycling is a very excellent exercise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I haven't had a day's illness in all my life.
Is that so? What in the world do you find to talk about?
Well, I'll let you do the talking for both of us.
Oh, yeah? Well, it's too bad you're so helpless.
What do you mean, helpless?
You certainly are helpless. You certainly are. Whenever you sew on a button or darn your socks, don't I always have to thread the needle for you?
Yeah, you're very good-hearted, you are. The only nice thing you ever done was get a bicycle and let me use the car.
Honey, we ought to get a bicycle built for two. Like they have over in London, England, huh?
Yeah, I know the kind. The men and women both wear flannel trousers.
They do?
Mm-hmm. And the only difference is that the women don't wear suspenders.
The women don't wear suspenders?
No.
How do they keep their London britches from falling down?
Ladies and gentlemen, that was none other than Brown and Lavelle, who still think that a bicycle is a kind of smell of water. Well, to go on for the show, here comes Tizzy Lace. Tizzy just got out of the hospital. She tried to ride side saddle on a bicycle. Come in, Tizzy, and fix up this show, will you?
Hello, folks, sis. Listeners, adios.
An excerpt of Don Wilson and the comedy team of Brown and Lavelle from the Mirth Parade from 1933. And back on the shelf it goes. This has been an hour of Collection Curios on Tuned to Yesterday. Be with us again for more rare and unique programs from radio's golden age. I'm Mark Lavelnier. Thanks for listening.